what I wanted to speak about tonight, really, two classic pieces on Chumash, one from a Kliyoka, one from an Arachayim. They both ostensibly speak about Sukkim and Chumash, that are familiar to us, but each of them uses the Pasuk and Chumash as a springboard to discuss topics which are very relevant not only to the Yontif of Shavuos, but really to the whole enterprise of Torah study, which obviously is central to what Shavuos is all about. And I thought that there would be good ways. Each of them is a beautiful board in its own right, and I think each of them is a beautiful way to sort of close the season and prepare us for the Yontif of Shavuos. So first I want to start with just a beautiful Kliyoka. The Kliyoka is actually, if you want to take a look in the Chumash, it's found in the Parsha which we just read this past Shabbos, Parshas Emor, which, as we know, Parshas Emor, the whole cycle of the Moadim, of the yearly festivals, is spelled out in the Chumash, and the clearest description of Sfiras HaOmer actually is, you know, discussed, you know, in Parshas Emor. So in Parshas Emor, we get a famous pasuk which many people say every night as they count Sfira. The Torah tells us, "Arvi machras hashavos hashviyis tisperu chamishim yom." You should count 50 days until the day following the 7th week, and then on the 50th day, which is Shavuos, they craft them mincha chadasha l'Hashem. You should bring a new korban, a new flower offering to the Ribbono Shel Olam. What is this flower? What is this new flower offering? So Rashi tells us, "Hi amincha harishona shehuva min hachodosh." This is the first meal offering, the first flower offering that comes from the new crop of wheat. It's called a mincha chadasha. It's called a new flower offering, right? Because it's from the new crop, the new grain, the new wheat, which was grown this year. Everything else that has been born previously has been from the previous year's grain, i.e. the yashon, the old grain. This is from the chadosh, from the new grain. And the pasuk goes on to detail what exactly this carbon consists of. From your various dwelling places, you should bring this bread, which is going to be waved in the Beis HaMikdash, shtayim shnei esronim, two loaves of bread, each one an isaron, a certain measurement, solas tiyeno, it should be made of the finest flour, chametz te'ofeno, and it should be uncharacteristically chametz. Most of the menachos, most of the flour offerings which were brought in the Beis HaMikdash had to be matzah. They didn't, by the way, necessarily have to be the matzah we think of. We think matzah, we think stripes, you know, crackers. We should realize that it was possible, and to this day many Sfardim have this practice, to make bread which is unleavened, which is matzah halachically, but nonetheless doesn't have that crumbly, cracker-like consistency which we associate with matzah. There's a whole industry out there called soh matzah, which to this day many Sfardim have the practice of eating on Pesach. And probably when we talk about the matzah, which was used for karbanos, you have to picture something that looks a little bit more like pita bread than the kind of matzah that we're used to thinking about when we think matzah. But in any case, it was usually you would use unleavened bread. Atypically, the flour offerings which were brought on Shavuos, the quote-unquote shtei halechem, the two loaves of bread, were actually chametz. Right? Parenthetically, just before we see the Kliyoka, one of the most famous customs that's associated with Shavuos, the custom of eating milchiks, is actually perhaps tied to this idea of the shtei halechem. The Ramah writes that the custom, the various variations of the custom to eat milchiks, the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserle, is writing in Poland in the 1500s, writes that the proper way to serve milchiks is to first serve milchiks, and then clear the table, and then serve fleishiks. Why? So, not just because all the men in the house want fleishiks, all the women in the house want milchiks, so we decide, you know, compromise. They have the giving of the Torah. Might as well make everybody happy. But the Ramah says, no, that's not the reason. Says the Ramah, because we know there's a halacha in the laws of kashrus, that if you cut up a loaf of bread and serve it with a milchik meal, and then you want to serve a fleishik meal, you have to cut up a different loaf of bread. The bread that was cut and was out on the table during a milchik meal, that bread has become milchik, and you have to serve a different loaf of bread for a fleishik meal. So Mimela, says the Ramah, if you first make kiddush, and you make hamotzi, and then serve the cheesecake, and the bread has been out on the table during the cheesecake portion of the meal, and then you clear everything off the table and you serve fleishik, you're going to have to bring out a second loaf of bread to cut up. Now, by forcing us to bring out two loaves of bread, says the Ramah, you've now created a zecher, a reminder to the shtei halechem, to the two loaves of bread, which were brought in the Beit HaMikdash as the karbon, the special offering brought on Shavuos. Right? Now, obviously, that whole way of looking at the custom of eating dairy only works if you have dairy and then meat. In other words, that's an integral part of the custom. The whole part of the custom, it really has nothing to do with dairy per se. It's a roundabout way of forcing us to use two loaves of bread. Obviously, those variants of the custom that have you eating dairy exclusively, which are, you know, appropriate variants of the custom, wouldn't work with this understanding of the Ramah. But that's the way the Ramah writes in its comments to Shulchan Aruch.
Couldn't you get two loaves of bread with the milk?
That would make things too easy, right? But no, in other words, but this forces you to have two loaves of bread. If you just, in other words,
if you right,
remember, you know, ordinarily you'd always have two loaves of bread there just for Lecha Mishnah.
Right.
This makes it more obvious that you have two loaves of bread.
In other words,
right, you have to cut up. But ordinarily, most people don't have the custom of cutting up necessarily the second loaf. If they eat it, they cut it up. But, you know, many people will make the bracha over two loaves of bread and then only cut one up. Here you have to cut up two, and you end up having a very graphic reminder of the Shtei Halecha. Okay, so, you know, that's, it also gets you to serve the cheesecake at the beginning of the meal, which, at least in my home, nobody really objects to. certainly not the balabais. In any case.
But this is when you wash twice. When we eat the cheesecake, we don't wash.
Right, so that's another variant of the minhag. See, where it gets a little bit sticky, so to speak. There's a Zohar, where the Zohar says that you're not supposed to consume milk and meat in the same meal, even if you have the milk before the meat. That's the Zohar. It's pretty clear that the Ramah was not working with that understanding of the Zohar, because the whole thing wouldn't work with that. There's no way to make it work with that Zohar. So the minhag of many, especially by Chassidim, to davka make kiddush, just have mezonos and, you know, milchiks with the mezonos, and then clear the table, wait a little bit, wash, and then have amotzi afterwards, and then have the fleishiks. That's all working with the Zohar, which would be against the Ramah. It's hard to square the Ramah with that particular practice. Again, like anything else in Klal Yisrael, you have many, many different minhagim. There's kulam ahuvim, kulam berum, kulam kedoshim. You know, you can't say any one minhag is better than any other minhag. But that's the minhag Ramah. You know, the minhag Ramah is to davka, you know, create a situation where during the same meal, you're bringing out, you know, two different loaves of bread in order to be reminiscent of the Shtei Halecha.
But you don't wash twice?
No, you don't wash twice, because that also defeats the purpose. In other words, it's that during the same meal you cut up two. You cut up two loaves.
No.
Again, according to the Ramah, you wouldn't. Yeah, there are, if you're, for those who are careful for this Zohar, not to eat milchiks and fleishiks during the same meal, even with the milchiks first, you would have to either not wash for the milchiks or wash, bench, walk around the house a couple of times, you know, wash again, you know, have another loaf. But again, the Ramah, I don't think, is assuming that. The Ramah is assuming that during the same meal, you know, there's a milchiks portion of the meal, and then there's a fleishiks portion of the meal, and a separate loaf of bread is served for each portion of the meal.
Okay.
So, okay. Yes. It's one way of doing it, you know, but it goes back to this Shtei Halecha.
One meal, you eat both, the milchiks and
right,
the fleishiks.
Right, right.
Don't you have to wait a certain amount of time?
So again, that's all based on the Zohar. The Gemara, which is what was passed in the Shulchan Aruch, is between milchiks and fleishiks, you have to wash your hands, you have to wash your mouth, and you have to eat something like bread to kind of get the
to clean out
the palate. According to the letter of the law, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. If you do that, you could have you could have your cheesecake, and within 5 minutes, be eating your cholent. Right? I mean, that's
doesn't bother, I don't know, it doesn't bother me as much as it bothers some of the people here, but that according to the letter of the law in Shulchan Aruch, that's what you need to do. That's what the Gemara says. The custom of waiting a half an hour between Milchitz and Fleishitz, or an hour between Milchitz and Fleishitz, is all based on a Zohar. It's not the letter of the law as brought in Shulchan Aruch. So again, Pashtus from the Ramah, it sounds like he was not makbid for that, that stricture of the Zohar.
In every other respect too, just with it.
Like any good person, he called it like he sees it, you know. It's, I don't know if he was a Mekel, a Machmir, you know. He said what he thought was the Emes, you know. So sometimes it was this way, sometimes it was that way. So, the Kitzer, let's go back to the Kliyaka for a moment. We just mentioned the Psukim over here. So the Kliyaka asked the following question. This carbon of the Shtei Alechem, which was brought on Shavuos, is referred to as a Mincha Chadosha. A new flower offering. Now, again, the simple explanation of what that means is that it's a flower offering that comes, that's brought from the new crop. But yet, the phraseology itself is a little bit striking. A mincha chadosha. It should really be mincha min hachadosh, you know, a flower offering from the new crop. It's not that the flower offering is new. Right, it's a flower offering that's from grain, which is new. Why would you use the adjective chadosha, new, to describe the offering itself, as opposed to referring to the grain? So says the Kliyakar, this is a hint in the Chumash itself to the notion that Shavuos is man matan Torah sein. That Shavuos is the time of year, or is the day, on which the Torah is given. Because one of the great mysteries that one has reading through the Chumash is that the Chumash never makes it quite clear that the Torah itself was given on Shavuos. We have a description of revelation of Matan Torah. The Torah does tell us that the Torah was given in the early days of Sivan. It says that the Jewish people came to Har Sinai in the beginning of the third month, which is Sivan. So it sounds like sometime around then is when the Torah was given. And the Torah does tell us numerous times about the holiday of Shavuos, but the Torah never explicitly ties the holiday of Shavuos to the celebration of giving the Torah. When the Torah does talk about Shavuos, it portrays it as the end of this counting of 7 weeks. It describes Shavuos as the time of harvest. It was the time of the wheat harvest. But the Torah never explicitly puts together two things that to us are almost obvious, that Shavuos is man matan Torah seinu. Shavuos is the time in which the Torah was given. So says the Kliyakar, this pasuk in the Chumash that describes the carbon brought on Shavuos as a mincha chadasha, as a new offering, is a hint at that linkage. How so? He says as follows. Torah is something that to us is supposed to be eternally new. We're always supposed to be looking for novelty in Torah. We're never supposed to look at Torah as being something from the ancient past, something which doesn't really relate to us, but rather, in the words of Chazal, "V'chol yom v'yom yiyu be'inecha kichadoshim." Every single day, the words of Torah should strike us with the freshness, with the newness. And we should never get that sense that, you know, Torah is chalila stale, or that, you know, it's something jaded, it's something ancient, been there, done that. We're supposed to have the sense of constant vitality. We're supposed to feel that the words of Torah are things that are given to us today. Right? The pasuk, again, we all know from Kriyat Shema, is that v'hayu advarim ha'eila, these things, asher anochi mitzavcha hayom, these things which I command you today, should be on your heart. Every day we're supposed to see the words of Torah as if they're being communicated to us today. So that says the Kliyakar is what's meant in the pasuk, the craft of Mincha Chadosh al Hashem. Bring on Shavuos a, not just a flower offering from the new flower, bring a flower offering which expresses the idea of newness. Because the concept of newness, of novelty, of freshness is supposed to be a major theme of the holiday of Shavuos itself. Part of what Shavuos is about is to regenerate within ourselves
that feeling that Torah is fresh, it's relevant, it's new, it's for us today, it's not from yesteryear. You know, that sense of newness, the Mincha Chadasha, is what the whole Yom Tov of Shavuos is supposed to be about. And with that idea, the Kli Ochr then tackles a question which was sort of in the background, head on. And he says as follows. Why is it that the Torah never identifies Shavuos as being the Zman Matan Torah Seinu? You know, we alluded to that a moment ago, that the Torah never explicitly draws that linkage between, you know, the day of Shavuos, the celebration of Shavuos, and the fact that Shavuos was the day on which the Torah was given. Isn't that curious? I mean, wouldn't you think that a major event like the giving of the Torah should be explicitly linked in the Torah to a particular day? I mean, why is it, you know, there's so much discussion about the holiday of Shavuos, and, you know, the story of the revelation is preserved for us in the Chumash itself. How come the Torah actually never does make that connection?
It makes it the whole Yom Kippur. Because the minute we say it was given then, so now it's not a chadash.
Right. So that's exactly the idea the Kli Ochr says. As the Kli Ochr, had the Torah identified Shavuos as that was the day on which the Torah was given, we would get the sense, A, that it was something in the past, and B, that Torah is kind of relegated to one day of the year. This is the Torah day. What about the other 353 days of the year? Yeah, whatever. Right? There's the day on which we celebrate Torah, and then the other 353 days of the Jewish year we don't celebrate Torah. No, Chas v'Shalom. There's no one day. There's no one Torah day. Every day is Torah day, right? In a sense, it's kind of analogous to the joke that people make with regard to Mother's Day, right? We don't believe in Mother's Day. Every day is Mother's Day, right? So that's a little bit, you know, said tongue-in-cheek. But the Kli Ochr says, essentially, from a serious perspective, that's why the Torah never identifies the day of Shavuos, or the holiday of Shavuos, as being the day on which the Torah was given, because that would create the impression, you know, there's a Torah day one day during the year. There isn't a Torah day one day during the year. Every day is Torah day. How can you single out one day during the year and say, this is Torah day? B'chol yom v'yom yu b'necho kichadoshim. If we were to celebrate the Torah's giving on one particular day during the year, it would create the impression that that's not a constant part of our lives. So the very idea of the Mincha Chadosha, which is, again, according to the Kli Ochr, the sole time, the only time, that the Torah even obliquely links the idea of the giving of the Torah to the holiday of Shavuos, is to underscore exactly this idea. It's not, you know, it's not an ancient Torah, it's a Torah which applies and which we should be celebrating every single day of our lives.
It shouldn't be commemorative.
Right. It's not something that happened in the ancient past and now we'll move on, right? This is something constantly with us. The Kli Ochr uses the same idea to address a very similar question, which I guess, since we're not picking up till after Sukkot, is also relevant for us to ask at this time. Everybody knows what happens on Rosh Hashanah. What is Rosh Hashanah's theme all about? Judgment, the Yom HaDin. But look for that in Chumash and you won't find it. Right? The Torah says that you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. But the Torah never really explains why that should be so. Again, we're so to speak, indoctrinated with the idea that shofar is related to the judgment and to tshuva and all of that. But, you know, take a step back. If you just read the Chumash with, a totally unbiased perspective, all you know is that there's this holiday, not even on Rosh Hashanah, there's a holiday on the first day of the seventh month. Right, it's never really referred to as Rosh Hashanah in the Chumash. There's a holiday on the first day of the seventh month when he's supposed to blow shofar. Why he's supposed to blow shofar? I don't know. It doesn't really say in the Chumash why he's supposed to blow shofar. Right? So we, of course, know, you know, it's part of our tradition. We accept the notion that Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin, is the day of judgment, and that characterizes our mood, our feeling, our tefillos on Rosh Hashanah. We relate to shofar in that context, but you know what? The Chumash never spells that out. How come the Chumash never spells out the aspect of Rosh Hashanah which you would think is most basic, is most crucial? How could you go through Chumash
learning about the fact that there is a Rosh Hashanah, but not really ever having, you know, spelled out explicitly what this most salient concept of Rosh Hashanah is all about. So comes the Kliyok and he says it's the same thing. If you were to identify one day during the year as Judgment Day, so you would tremble and shiver on that day.
And the whole year.
And then the rest of the year you'd go about your business. No, you shouldn't look at it that way, says the Kliyok. Adam nidam b'chol yom. A person is judged every single day of the year. Right? A person should have that feeling, that awe and trepidation. Again, I don't know if you walk around like it's Rosh Hashanah every single day, but, you know, that consciousness that we're being judged up in Shamayim, up in heaven, is something which is a constant awareness that a person is supposed to have. For the Torah to single out one day as Judgment Day would, in a sense, downplay the fact that we're supposed to be cognizant of our actions and acting as if we're being judged, because we are being judged, on a daily basis. It's the same idea, says the Kli Yakar. You don't want to single out Shavuot as Torah Day. You don't want to single out Rosh Hashanah as Judgment Day. Torah and judgment are things that are constants in our lives, and they can't just be relegated to one day during the year, and, you know, then we can go about our business during the rest of the year. A very fascinating concept that the Kli Yakar brings out over here. One last point from this Kli Yakar, right? This is just half the shiur tonight. One last point from this Kli Yakar. Says the Kli Yakar, let's go back to this Mincha Chadasha, to the Shtei Halechem, to these two loaves of bread that were brought in the Beis HaMikdash on Shavuos. Why were they chametz? Right? Again, atypically, they were chametz, they were leavened bread, as opposed to almost any other mincha, any other flour offering, which was matzah, which was non-leavened. Okay, so good. Why were they different? Why make the mincha of Shavuos specifically one which is chametz? So says the Kli Yakar as follows. We know from one particular famous statement from Chazal that chametz is associated with the Yetzer Hara. Right? The Gemara says at the end of the second paragraph in Brachos that Ritzoneinu lasos Ritzoncha, really God, this is a prayer that's uttered to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, really God, you should know that our will is to do your will. We want to do what's right. Why don't we do what's right? Ritzoneinu lasos Ritzoncha elo shesear shebeiso me'akev. Right? But, in the words of the Gemara, the sourdough, the chametz, the yeast within us is preventing us from doing what's right. What yeast within us, you know, what chametz within us, what, you know, the hamburger bun which I ate, you know, is somehow getting in the way of my doing the Ratzon Hashem. Clearly, just from the expression of Chazal, you see that Chazal equated the Yetzer Hara with chametz, right? Now, metaphorically, you know, you can refer to the Yetzer Hara as chametz, right? And the Yetzer HaTov, right, the good inclination within man, is matzah, right? And, you know, part of the theme of Pesach is that for 7 or 8 days out of the year, we basically take the Yetzer Hara, we throw him out of the house in the most demonstrative way possible, and everything in the house is just purely Yetzer, you know, Yetzer HaTov, right? But comes the holiday of Shavuos. And Shavuos, of course, is the holiday of Torah. I mean, when all said and done, yeah, every day is the holiday of Torah. But Shavuos is really, you know, the holiday of Torah. That's, you know, the Hafil, that's the Mother's Day. Every day is Mother's Day. But, you know, you only buy the roses, you know, one day during the year. Right? So Shavuos is the holiday of Torah. Now, Chazal tell us something really incredible about the power of Torah. Torah, of all of the things that we have, has the power to subjugate the Yetzer Hara. To basically take him and break him, and, you know, render him powerless against us. Barasi Yetzer Hara, Chazal say in Kiddushin, God says, I created a Yetzer Hara, Barasi Torah Tavlin, but I've created Torah as an antidote to the Yetzer Hara. Parenthetically, many explain the word Tavlin literally means a spice, not an antidote. And, you know, our role in life, many explain, is not to uproot the Yetzer Hara, because that's part and parcel of who we are, but the role of Torah can take the Yetzer Hara and spice it and transform it. You know, you have meat which is, or any other kind of dish, which is unpalatable, without spices, you have the right spices, salt, pepper, whatever it is, you can take that unpalatable thing and make it edible. The Eitz Hara is not meant to be destroyed, the Eitz Hara is meant to be salted, it's meant to be spiced. The spice of the Eitz Hara is Torah. You put the Eitz Hara and Torah together, Torah will vanquish the Eitz Hara. So says the Kli Yoker, that's the lesson of the Shnei HaLechem, the two loaves of bread we bring on Shavuos. Basically, in a sense, the Kli Yoker doesn't put it this way, but in modern terms we would say, Eitz Hara, oh, it's Shavuos. Bring him on. Bring him on. We can deal with him. Right? Any other time during the year, the Eitz Hara, the Chometz, is banished from the environs of the Beis HaMikdash. But there's one day during the year where we say we're not afraid of the Eitz Hara. Bring on the Chometz. When the Chometz, the Eitz Hara, is exposed to Torah, we have every confidence that the Eitz Hara is going to be defeated by the Torah itself. We're not afraid of the Eitz Hara on Shavuos. We bring him in to the Beis HaMikdash because the Eitz Hara, once he's exposed to Torah, doesn't stand a chance. Right, so that's the Shnei Alecha. You know, the Shnei Alecha represent the idea that the Eitz Hara ultimately is powerless, you know, up against the Kedusha, the sanctity, which Torah itself has to share. Right? The Gemara in a very striking expression says, "Impogav b'cha menuvol zeh." If this lowlife, there's no better way to translate it, right? If this lowlife, the Eitz Hara, comes upon you, right? A person feels that he or she is going to be held captive by the whims of the Eitz Hara. Moshcheu lebeis hamedrash, go and pull that lowlife into the Beis Medrash, sit him down, you know, learn with him a little bit, and the Torah has such a power that it can take this Eitz Hara and basically disarm him. You know, it can render him unable, you know, to create all of the terrible things that otherwise he would create. So that the Kli Yoker says is the Shnei Alechem, which we bring on Shavuos, again, for those who do have the minuk of arranging the milchiks and the fleshiks so as to recreate the Shnei Alechem. That's the message that we're ultimately sharing, that, you know, that the Eitz Hara doesn't stand a chance against the Kedusha, the sanctity which Torah itself possesses. Let me get in briefly the beautiful thought from the Ora Chaim, and with this we'll close. It's a nice way to close the not only this year but the season. In Parshas Yisro, it's like Ora Chaim Parshas Yisro, the beginning of Perek Yutes, the Torah there in Parshas Yisro describes how the Jewish people arrive around the mountain of Sinai and prepare to receive the Torah. And the Chumash there makes the following statement. Vayisu mirefidim, the Jewish people traveled from the place in the desert called Refidim. Vayovo midbar Sinai, they came to the desert of Sinai. Vayichan shom Yisrael neged hahar, and the Jewish people encamped opposite the mountain. Says the Ora Chaim, these three phrases, Vayisu merefidim, Vayachanu ba'midbar, they encamped in the desert, Vayichan shom Yisrael neged hahar, the Jewish people encamped there opposite the mountain, speak to three essential methods that we need if we want to grow in Torah. It's homiletic, but he reads it back into the pasuk. Number one, Vayisu merefidim. Refidim, literally, although refidim is the name of a place in the Chumash, refidim homiletically refers to laziness. Rafu yedeya min haTorah, their hands weakened from their attachment to Torah. Vayisu merefidim, says the Ora Chaim, if a person wants to acquire Torah, step one, don't be lazy. Lazy people will not accomplish anything in Torah learning. Vayisu merefidim, go away from laziness. Vayachanu ba'midbar, the Jewish people encamped in the desert. A desert is the lowliest type of environment one can imagine. Right? Nothing grows there, it's simple, it's humble. If you want to be able to achieve things in Torah, says the Ora Chaim, prerequisite number two is humility. Right? If you think of yourself as something, you won't accomplish anything in Torah. If you're a midbar, if you make yourself into a desert, in the sense that, you know, you see yourself in a lowly fashion, so then you'll be able to accomplish humility. And finally, Vayichan Shom Yisrael Neged Ahar, we're all familiar with the famous comment of Rashi, that it describes the Jews encamping opposite the mountain in the singular, right? Literally, he encamped opposite the mountain. Not they encamped opposite the mountain. He encamped. Why? Because the Jewish people united around Har Sinai. They became as one. Ki'ishechad v'levechad, like one person with one heart. Unity with others is the third prerequisite we need to be able to receive the Torah. Says the Aruch Chaim, these three ideas, you know, you have to be industrious, you have to be humble, and you have to engage in unity. You know, those were the three prerequisites that the Jewish people had receiving the Torah the first time around. Those are the three prerequisites that each and every one of us needs to receive the Torah, not only every Shavuos, but each and every day, you know, to work on those three character traits, you know, as a prerequisite for being able to receive the Torah. Halavai that the Torah that we're able to receive this Shavuos should be accompanied, you know, by that sense of zrizus, of alacrity, of industriousness, of humility, and ultimately of achdus, of unity, that we should be able to come together to receive the Torah in the proper way. I wish everybody a good Yom Tov, good summer, a nice Sivach Simatova, and we'll pick up Ezra Hashem after Simchas Torah.
Thank you.